Welcome back to the Mom Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick and my co-host is Chris Lucian. And we are incredibly excited today to be having Linda Rising with us. Got lots of excellent topics lined up about how do we do a better job of thinking, problem solving, decision making? What's the best way to approach change initiatives? And how can we survive stressful situations? But before we jump into those topics, Linda, do you mind introducing yourself for us?
Well, first of all, let me say thank you. In these tough times, it's wonderful to go around the world without having to get on an airplane. So thank you for including me in your mob podcast. So my name is Linda Rising. I live very close to Nashville, Tennessee, which, as you know, is Music City in the USA. And I am also a musician. In addition to being an agile consultant and somebody who's interested in the brain, I also direct and play in several musical groups, which we have been able to do even in these challenging times by rehearsing in our garage. So we have four garage bands going all week long. So welcome to Music City.
That's fantastic. That's really fun. And yeah, I've noticed that since things have gone more remote, people have kept the music going through, you know, I remember at an open space, people playing music on the breaks and stuff over Zoom. So that's really fun. I guess to jump right in your mind, how can we do a better job of thinking, problem solving, and decision making?
So let me ask you a question, first of all. Have you ever really worked hard on a problem of some kind? Maybe you're trying to debug a program, or you knew there was some issue that you had to face, but you didn't really know how you were going to face it. You had some decision, something you were looking for, but you couldn't find it, and you refused to give it up. You kept working on it and working on it, pressuring yourself to come up with a solution. And finally, you said, I've had enough. I cannot work on this anymore. I'm going to go to bed and I will wake up in the morning and I'll start afresh. And then in the morning, when you woke up and you were in the shower, all of a sudden, bingo, there was the answer, the thing you'd been looking for, the idea you needed. The way to solve this complicated problem, it just like magic suddenly appeared.
Happens all the time, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just yesterday.
Just yesterday. Absolutely. So, of course, I have never met anybody who hasn't had that experience. What I was very slow to realize is that perhaps I could do that intentionally. Instead of waiting with the feeling like I was exhausted, and that's what usually happens, is we hold on to that problem when we don't let it go because we feel we should be able to uncover the solution, and we work and we work and we work. We spend an enormous amount of time, and we don't let go until we're exhausted. We just cannot work on it anymore. And then we let go. And then we find, the next morning, the next day, maybe an hour later, who knows? It varies. There is the solution. So after reading a book by Daniel Kahneman called Thinking Fast and Slow, I don't know if you've read it. Most people have heard of it. Yep. It's a difficult book to read. I'm looking on your bookshelf to see if you have it.
It's over there.
Yeah, most people have heard of it. Mm-hmm. Many people have bought it. Some people have read perhaps the first chapter. But hardly anyone makes it all the way through. And really, now I realize it's not just that book. For me, it was, where did that book lead? So in Thinking Fast and Slow, there's a description of two modes of operating. Your brain has two kinds of behavior. One of them is called System One, not really very appealing, but that's not Kahneman's name. It has a long history in psychology. System One is the unconscious mind. And I don't know about you, but as a technical person, the idea of what your unconscious is doing was a little, I had a hard time. But thinking fast and slow got me realizing that you can do experiments. You can show with evidence what happens when system one, or your unconscious, is doing things for you, is thinking for you, is making decisions for you. System two, on the other hand, is your conscious mind. Now, when you wake up in the morning, system two comes online, and that's what we think is thinking. System two, the conscious mind. Whereas Kahneman shows in Thinking Fast and Slow that system two is really very small, not only in what it can do, but how it does it. It's slow, it's deliberate, it's logical. And we think that that is what the best kind of thinking is all about. System one, on the other hand, runs all the time. It never sleeps. And when you are an expert in anything, whether you've been practicing an instrument or playing a sport or learning a programming language or developing a piece of software, whatever your expertise is, the part of you that is performing is really in system one. System one contains all your expertise, all of your experience, everything you've ever read, everything you've ever heard. So when you are doing anything, really, system one is performing.
And that then maybe is more likely to synthesize multiple experiences from disparate areas, or is that?
Yes, yes. Yeah. That's right. And Kahneman spends a lot of time pointing out the flaws of system one. And if people do make it to the end of the book, that's what they take away, is how flawed system one is. And so they then think, and this is not the message at all, they then think, oh, well, system two, that should be the way to go then. And that's your intuition, is that logic, the rational, the slow, deliberate system two, that's the way to solve problems. And Kahneman doesn't do a good job of bringing out the power of system one. So to go back to the story about how you woke up in the morning and suddenly there it was, well, how did that happen? Did angels come in the night and say, Linda, the answer is 42. And so when you woke up, you said, ah, there it is, it's 42. You didn't do that with system two. System one, well, system one has been working on it from the get-go.
Is that the reasoning behind the Pomodoro technique, or is that?
I think it's a piece of it.
Yeah.
But what for me, what I began to experiment with was, how long do I have to work on something before I can? And I don't know, I love animals, so I don't have a dog, but I have a grand dog. And when we want her to bring the ball back to us, we say, leave it. So I have to say that to myself. I work on something, if I'm not getting anywhere, how long do I have to work before I can say, leave it, go away, do something else? Anything, really, preferably something that's unrelated or not like the thing you've been working on, but leave it. And then maybe an hour later, maybe the next morning, who knows, bingo, there will be the answer, if you will, from system one, who's been cranking away on it, because system one is where you and your expertise and your ability to pull all things together, that's where it is. And the other piece of this is system two cannot multitask. You can only do one thing at a time, whereas system one, and they've tried to measure this, has no limit. It can not only monitor your blood pressure and your heart rate, it can work on about 97 problems all at the same time. So if you just keep handing over things to system one, it doesn't seem to slow it down, and it does it almost without effort. Whereas when you really work hard on something, system two consumes an enormous amount of energy. That's why when you finish thinking about it, you think to yourself, well, I haven't done anything all day. I've been staring at my computer. Why am I so tired? About 20% of your intake is taken up by system two. It needs calories to function. So we're wasting that by spending too much time focusing on problems that you could just hand off to system one. And now, I hate to put this out there as though I really know, because you cannot do an experiment on yourself. That's an N of one. It's not enough. But for me, what I recommend is 10 minutes. Spend 10 minutes on it. If nothing is forthcoming, if you don't immediately see the answer, if you don't know what to do, leave it. And then the answer, who knows? Yeah. It takes a certain amount of time. Now, if you do that all day long, then all of a sudden you have moved forward into a bunch of other things that you now have gotten done, instead of spending your whole day on that one really tricky problem where you might have to wait till the next morning to get the answer anyway. And you are exhausted because you've overworked your system too, thinking that this is the way it is. This is how you solve problems, by overworking your system too. And even now, I try to teach this in a little class on thinking, and people are so reluctant. They say, I can't leave it. My boss will want to know if I'm making progress. And I said, well, you're not going to solve it anyway, are you?
Yeah.
In the meantime, you're just cranking away, wasting an enormous amount of time and energy. Mm-hmm. When if you leave it, you might have the answer in an hour or two. And in the meantime, you've already done three or four other things where you could solve it pretty easily. And now that checklist, check, 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 you've gotten a lot more accomplished, and you haven't wasted so much energy, so you don't feel as weighed down with all of the effort that it takes to really run system two. It's an energy hog.
Nice. So what this kind of brings to mind to me is almost like, I think I've heard you use the analogy before, Chris, of like a river coming downstream, right? And it's just going the path of least resistance almost, right? Like if it's coming up against a wall, the water doesn't just like, do a dam there, it like curves and goes a different direction. So I can kind of imagine myself doing it, but the one challenge I have is, if you're working with a team or in our case, often a mob, how do you help people realize this, like especially in a Kanban type situation, like we pull in a card, we wanna have one thing work in progress, we're working it and we can feel ourselves hitting the wall with system two, right? How do you help others in the moment realize that and shift?
Yeah, this is also true for groups.
Yeah.
And no more so than in the practice that we have of brainstorming. Mm. We get people in a room to do something like work on an idea for a new product or whatever. And we think that we can all sit around a table and overwork our system two, which is not creative. System two is, remember, the logical, slow, mm-hmm. methodical, linear thinker. And we think that by overusing our system two as a team, that we can come up with great ideas. It would be better if we said, okay, here's the problem. We're not making any progress. Give it 10 minutes. Can we think of something? No, we can't. So let's leave it. And we will all go back to, well, these days, who knows where you're going back to, but go back and then leave it. Mm-hmm. Don't consciously work on it, but just leave it and wait for somebody somewhere. They'll say, hey, guys, I just thought of it. Let's talk about this. Here's what I'm thinking. And throw it back into the group again. And now let's do 10 minutes and say, all right, well, now we can go. We got it. We're going to move forward. Or now we have a new thing that's holding us up. So we're not getting anywhere. Leave it. And don't go back and work on it. Go back and leave it. And somebody will say after an hour or 2 hours, I got it.
It's really funny. So this reminds me of kind of some of the early days of mobbing. I think over time, the mobs that I see, kind of build in deliberate breaks. And so there's like, 40 minutes go by and then everybody takes a break and then comes back. And I think during those breaks, a lot of the times they are, 10 minutes or so, and you'll see people come back with an idea. I see this pretty often, I think. And earlier in mobbing, there weren't deliberate breaks. There were more like people go and take breaks kind of when they need to. And it would kind of alternate. So you'd leave a few people there and then you'd have some people go take a break. And so I think back then there was a pretty big, pretty common phenomenon where somebody would go to the restroom and then come back. Everybody would still be stuck on the problem. The person that went to the restroom is the one that comes back and solves the problem, right? Sure. And then that would alternate. So that's kind of an interesting thing to deliberately consider system one in the, maybe break rotation or something like that to maximize the number of epiphanies that you come across or something. Is kind of a cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And what we know is there's science behind this. Mm. So if I had read all of this as somebody's idea or experience, I'm not sure I would have been as excited about it. But if you start with Kahneman and the research behind the existence of, this is not a physical thing, this is a behavioral thing, this is how your brain behaves, it's a model. It's, there are lots of models, but he has evidence that shows the power of these two systems, what one system does really well, because they're both useful. Obviously, we have evolved to have these two systems. Not all animals have a system two, but they all have a system one. Mm. So the system two came later. And in fact, in the beginning, it was, well, why do we even have it? Because it's so tiny and so ineffectual. System one can run the show easily and has been doing for tens of thousands of years. And the answer is, that's how you learn to do new things. Mm. A lot of animals are adapted to a particular environment, and if you move them, they're dead. Mm-hmm. But people live everywhere. We have dominated the planet by using system two. If it's cold or hot or rainy, or we can say, well, let's see, what should we do? And we can consciously tackle this problem, but It's a tiny, later evolved. And the problem now is we're stuck with thinking that that is all there is.
Yeah. And in a way, and this might be going off topic a little bit, but it's kind of a return to a more classical or ancient view of what's a flourishing life. And they didn't talk about system one and system two, but what they did talk about was habit. And the main goal of your system two, so to speak, was to help tune and train system one, right? So your virtues and habits and all those kind of things. And so it reminds me of that, where to be offloading as much as you can to that region or system one. So that's fascinating. And maybe this is a good time to switch topics, if that's all right. So to change gears from that, let's maybe jump into how do you best approach change initiatives?
So I think if you look at the work of E.M. Rogers, he did research on the response of typical populations to any new change. And I know that you know the result of what he identified as a tendency in groups of people. He said there are some people who really like change. They're the innovators. And then you've got the early adopters, then the early majority, the late majority, and the laggards. And I think most of us, especially if we're doing any kind of change, transformation, moving organizations to agile or whatever it is, we all think of ourselves as the innovators, maybe the early adopters. But right now, and for the whole year past, we have all been laggards. We have all thought, I don't like this. I don't like this change. I want to go back to the way things were. That's what laggards say. I don't like this. I want to go back to the way things were. And we have all, even those of us who love our garage bands and are happy about just walking around in our pajamas all day, we have all been saying that. So we should take away one of the biggest lessons out of this whole year. When we go back to whatever normal is, and now we take on the role of change agent, or here are some new ideas, and we run up against people that in the past we would have denigrated because they are laggards. They don't like our new ideas. They don't want to go down this new path. We can say, I've been there. I know what that's like. And you would be sincere because that's how you're feeling now. And you've carried that with you for a whole year. So let's have a little more empathy, a little more understanding at how difficult, especially if you're going into your team or your organization and you suddenly, because that's what happened to us a year ago, suddenly the doors closed, the lights went out, and suddenly it was all different. Think about how that felt and how it still feels. So the biggest gift we've gotten from this experience is the feeling that all of those people who were resistant to our great ideas, all the new things, the cool things that we want to try, we know now at a deep level, we know how that feels and how difficult it is for us. Because right now, we don't even know what's going to happen. Even with the vaccines, we talked about this earlier, that I've been fully vaccinated, so is my husband. And in fact, you cannot play in one of our garage bands unless you have been vaccinated. But we still don't get together in large groups. We don't perform except outside. We're not back there yet, and we got a long way to go. And when we do get back, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So change is hard. I think we learned that, didn't we? It's hard. And not only that, but this response that E.M. Rogers identified is hardwired. So even those people who are innovators or laggards, we're hardwired as a population to have those responses, and it has meant our survival. If we hadn't responded in that rainbow of opportunities, we wouldn't have made it as a species. There's an important role for every one of those innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, laggards. They all have a part to play in everything that we do. And so we've appreciated innovators, of course, and early adopters, well, and early majority, maybe not so much, but we've never really seen the role of late majority and laggards. And now we know what it is. It's to make sure that we remember all the good things about what we had before, all the good things about the way it was, all the good things we miss right now, all the good things that we never appreciated. The laggards will make sure we don't forget that. So you should embrace them and say, oh, thank you. I was so wrapped up in my cool new idea that I didn't realize, oh my goodness, if we do this, then there are some really good things that we forgot about, we never appreciated until now. Oh, I see. Thank you. Thank you for making sure that we, as a team, as an organization, as an individual, we don't forget all those good things. Because that's what we're doing now.
Yeah, this is something I've been realizing a lot lately, is similar to what you're saying, in that for one, to have legitimate empathy. I really love that transition, right? Because it's, I don't know if you've heard people say before, like, oh, I know where you've been, but you kind of get the feeling they haven't. And so so to say that with sincerity, like, oh, I've really been in a place where I've resisted change or resisted this or that. And I think, and then to sincerely and heartfelt way, like, appreciate them and have a place for them in, you know, at the table, at the team, because it's not only good to do because laggards have served a good purpose through all, you know, sustaining bad changes and, you know, getting through those, but also I value like the skepticism and the kind of devil's advocate role they play, because instead of just like the new change just kind of coming in and rolling over and taking over, they challenge it and make sure that the pieces that get through actually make sense, you know. And I think even if the change is the right thing or the better thing or the next best experiment, it's good to kind of unearth the reasons why and have that conversation. And so what are ways have you have shown appreciation for the laggards, or is there any specific things you say or do?
We could also extend this. Mm-hmm. It has a broader application. So after the 2016 election, I was casting about for a way to survive. And I found an organization called Braver Angels, which still exists, and I'm still a part of it. And what Braver Angels does is attempt to bring the two sides of the political spectrum in the U.S. together. Because those of us who have what we think are progressive new ideas, we don't usually talk to those other people. In teams and organizations, you see this, that not only do we denigrate the laggards, we don't ever talk to them. We don't ever sit down and have a respectful conversation to just say, well, tell me why it is that you feel that, well, what are you thinking? And I'd really like to know. And to do that with curiosity, because you really do want to know. We tend to, as a species, only hang around with people who think the same way we do. And so in organizations and in our country right now, if we don't have those conversations, then we tend to think, well, those people, those laggards or those other people who don't think the way I do about a particular issue or a particular presidential candidate, well, they must be stupid or crazy or both. And there is no reason why I would ever want to have a conversation with them. Yeah. Now that will get us nowhere fast.
Mm-hmm.
And what Braver Angels had to point out to me was I was doing that. I was thinking, those people, they must be stupid or crazy or both. Why would I? Mm. Why would I ever want to listen to what they had to say? Mm. Why would I care? Why would I waste my time trying to understand their point of view? And when I came face to face with that, I thought, I am the problem here. Yeah. It's not some presidential candidate. That's not the problem. I am the problem. Hmm. And I had to learn the answer to your question. I had to learn. I thought I knew. I had to really learn how to sit down and have a conversation with somebody who believes that it's okay to have assault rifles in your house. That's one of the most difficult conversations I have ever had in my life. Yeah. To really listen mm-hmm. to somebody like that, I would never have done that in the past. Mm. So I wasn't being open. I was preaching that. I was saying, oh, you need to listen to people. What do the laggards have to say? I really wasn't doing that. Hmm. That is hard. There is no way around that. But the rewards are considerable to come away from a conversation with somebody who disagrees violently with you and to come away after an experience like that saying, you know, we have a lot more in common than I realized. I appreciate your point of view more than I realized. You are a human being just like me. We both love our families and our country. We want the best. We just don't agree on the implementation of those feelings. And if we can only say, oh, if you only agree with me about every single step of that implementation, then you are a bad person. Well, no wonder we're in a mess.
What caused you to want to, or you know, what caused you to get past that that reluctance to have that conversation? How did you get from the position before of I'd never speak to anybody by that, like that, and get to joining Greater Angels and having these conversations?
Well, right after the election, the first thing I did was participate in the Women's March in Nashville. We had tens of thousands of people. Nashville has a population of about 1 million, so I consider that a small city. But all of those people, they were so energized, and we marched on the Capitol, and I thought, wow, this is like going back to the 70s, except my hair is shorter, and I'm not smoking anything. But anyway, I thought, this is it. I'm going to get involved. It's my fault for this election. I better get out here and do something. So I tried to get involved politically. And what I found was both sides are crazy. I cannot participate in politics. So I read an article in the New York Times about what was called Braver Angels.
Yeah, Braver
Angels. And I thought, I got to try it. So I went to a workshop, and in the workshops, that's what you do. You have conversations. Mm. You identify with one end of the spectrum or another, even if you all say, and this is another interesting thing, we all think we're in the middle. Oh no, I'm not, I don't take sides here. I'm in the middle, I'm balanced, I know it. Yeah, we all think that, yeah. So where do you sort of lean? And now you have to have in the workshop series of conversations with people who identify more with the other side. And it is a struggle, but by the end of the day, you're exhausted, of course, because that's all system two. You walk away feeling like, okay, I've learned a lot. I think I'm better. Nobody changed minds. It's not about that. If you're waiting for everybody to believe the same way for the same reasons, Jonathan Haidt has shown that we not only disagree about what it is, but underneath that, the moral foundations, that's all his research, our moral foundations are different.
Yeah.
We're never going to line those up. That's just not going to happen. So if we can't have a way forward, if we're waiting for that ultimate agreement where we all say, oh, yes, I think this on abortion or gay rights or anything, it's not going to happen. So if we can't make progress when we disagree, and that would be true at any level, whether it's the country or any organization or any team or any family, any marriage, any friendship, you're never going to agree perfectly on anything with anybody.
So, it's only amplified by social media and polarization and
things. Of course. Like that, right? And of course.
Having a mutual respect for each other's humanity is a very difficult thing to do. And and I think that then further polarizes candidates back and forth, as things go forward. And as that polarization grows, then, you know, I think you finally see more moderates appear, later on. I thought a lot about this because I heard you tell this story of joining this organization in the past. And I think that influenced me later on in kind of empathy related activities and trying to find those. And one thing that we had started doing recently that this just reminded me of fairly recently, we've been doing it for a number of months now, is essentially equal representation from two cross-functional teams in lean coffees and deliberately trying to set up groups of people together to talk to each other. So in a business context, this idea of saying, okay, let's get the product owners and then let's get an equal number of developers and let's put them in a lean coffee and say, how can we improve our communication? How can we understand each other better? And then doing the same thing with, other teams, especially if you don't have a dedicated DevOps group, things like having software developers and ops people kind of, how do we work better together? Let's do a lean coffee. Let's try and develop empathy. And there's probably a very good reason to get one person of each discipline that doesn't exist on the same mob or team together and regularly try and build empathy for each other. Because I think that this is, at the greater political situation, I think that you're very right. Like, this exists everywhere. And I think that goes all the way down into the most minor pieces of our lives, where unless you deliberately practice building empathy for those that disagree with you, it's going to be impossible to truly reach that next level of collaboration and understanding. So I really appreciate what you have to say on that.
Yeah, because if you look at all the work of Kahneman and others that have tried to understand the biases in system one, is we have really strong biases that are always going to lead us to this isolated, I'm right and you're wrong. I tend to think that everyone else who matters thinks the way I do. So we distort reality, we ignore facts to bolster up our point of view. And if we're not constantly reminded and constantly forced to be open to other points of view, then we will just dig that hole deeper. And our brains are working overtime to reinforce all of those tendencies. And the reason for it is survival. We want to stay with people who are like us, who believe the way we do. And those other people, they're the enemy. They're trying to get me. Who knows what they might do? So we have to work hard. It takes work to do something, to fly in the face of all of that evolutionary hardwiring that has been with us for tens of thousands of years. That's the way we are.
Stressful.
and I guess I want to jump in there and say, like, it is hard, and it definitely is hard. But what I've found with many things that are hard like this, the more you do it, it doesn't make it not hard, but it makes it easier. And you start to feel the rewards, right? You can feel the empathy, right? And you can, and I love how you put it, to treat them with humanity, kindness, consideration, respect, and be truly curious. And, you know, whether it's political or within a company, you want it to feel like a civil discourse, as you said before, and not like a cultural war. And I think I'm starting to understand more. Jez Humble was giving a talk where he said, the best way to influence change, and I think he was talking about continuous delivery, is to find the person on the team or the organization that you think is the craziest and go have lunch with them. And he said, that's when you'll start seeing things, you know, things gel in the team and things start changing. And I think this is very inspiring what you've shared with us today. Well, we are coming close to our time box, even though I would love to keep going because this is so fantastic. Is there anything you'd like to plug or share before we close out the episode?
I think maybe what I try to encourage in people these days is to think about all the good things that are happening in the pandemic. That we said we're all laggards and we all want to go back to the way things were. But when that happens, whatever it is, whenever it is, there are things we're going to miss. And there are lots and lots of good things that have come out of this experience. And since I'm a musician, I can share one of them, which is that many of the people I work with, we play early music, late Renaissance, early Baroque. And many of the professionals in that area were stuck because now they can't perform, they can't give lessons. But these people who are typically not technical have learned how to record using Audacity, for instance. It's a very common program for recording, and to use Zoom. And now their services, their abilities, their talents have been shared with people around the world who would never, ever have had a chance to spend an hour learning Baroque trills on a recorder, for instance. That's so new and so exciting and so likely to continue that we'll all say when it was done, wasn't that a good thing that we were able to get this started? And now we can include all of these people who would never have been a part of this community before, but now they can. So that's just one example. So we need to look for those to help us get through this, because it ain't over yet, as they say, to realize all the good things, all the, we call them bright spots, the positive deviants, the people who have done so many good things because this pandemic happened. And then instead of focusing on the negative and how bad it is, and yes, we know people who have died. Yes, we have suffered. I don't want to take away from that. But to realize there are always these benefits, these bright spots, and we will miss them.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah, it's easy to focus on the negative, but to look to the good and try to turn it up is fantastic.
It turns out we are hardwired to do that. So it also takes work.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, please, this has been so much fun, Linda. Really learned a lot in this conversation. So to our audience, please like and subscribe. And if you feel inspired like I do now, you know, please share this video with those who maybe need to learn more about System One, maybe need to learn more about, might be inspired by learning about how to engage kindly with those they disagree with and help change go well in the organizations. So reach out to us on Twitter, YouTube, and more with your comments, suggestions. We love hearing all feedback. And until next time, have a good one, everybody. Bye.
Bye.